Blog Talk Radio.
Although it's about 6 degrees here. Hey, I'm here, Victoria Vitier, your co-host of Chai Chat with my rockin' co-host, Mary Rockenstein. Hey, Mary, are you out there? Keep it warm.
Hey, Victoria, and I concur. This is a good day to be drinking chai. Chai anything. It's freezing.
It's a chai day here. We're in Columbus, Ohio. I don't know where all you are. I hope you're somewhere warm and have a nice warm beverage in front of you. But we've got a great show for you today because we're going to look at where the rubber meets the road. Yay, and that's really important in everything. But we're especially going to be talking directly with you folks out there today about some specific kinds of issues that you encounter every day in your world of work. And we're going to help you think about it differently. Right, Mary?
Absolutely. We're going to help you think about it differently. Warm things up a bit.
Yeah, a little bit, just a little. Hey, we've had 4 shows so far and in our new season, and we've laid some groundwork for creating new worlds at work because that's our thing, and that's what we want to encourage everyone to realize that they can begin to do no matter where you stand. We know that, you know, we talked about a big statistic that's going in the wrong direction. We know that the engagement levels among associates at work has declined and continues to look pretty bad at about 70%, and as a result, we've presented a starting point for our listeners and our shows to do something different. We talked about enlightened leadership in our first show. We talked about the be, do, have model in our second show. We talked about awakened doing in our third show. And in our fourth show, we started your new year off with a couple of really important intentions and our wishes for you or for you to live with more authenticity and alignment in your work world and otherwise in your other parts of your world as well. So those are 4 very foundational shows, and we invite everyone who has not taken a listen to those to, you know, get a cup of tea and plug in your earphones and take a listen to those shows because we lay some very important principles out for you, and we're going to be using those in the rest of our season, actually. We'll be referring to those all over the place. Right, Mary?
Absolutely.
Cool. So this talk about be, do, have, authenticity and alignment and all of this good stuff, you know, a lot of times people wonder, you know, well, how does that really map out, you know, in my workplace? How do I operationalize that? How does that really work? And Mary, you know, you're really immersed with a lot of clients working in the work world at the current time. I'm working with individual clients and small work groups and management groups. And, you know, we really want to help people leverage these concepts because that's where it matters, where they live at work every day. So can you help by giving some examples and really let's talk about how this stuff, you know, really, really functions day to day and how it can function better?
Yeah, and as I think about this be, do, have, I have to say that if you're just listening in for the first time, you might hear that and think to yourself, you two are a bunch of yo-yos. Keep drinking your chai. This doesn't make any sense to me. I have to tell you, I've been so encouraged lately because I've had conversations with clients and with other organizations, and they are really starting to talk in terms of be, do, have. They're really starting to get it. And this couldn't have been planned or orchestrated any better, but I was having a conversation with someone yesterday in a client organization, and it just so happened that the director of human resources was participating in this conversation. And this individual started using words like authenticity and authentic, and I'm like, oh yeah. And I said, are you familiar with the, you know, the be, do, have model? Because that's exactly what you're talking about. But here's what was really just absolutely, I got the biggest grin on my face. At one point, the director of human resources said to the individual, is this the job that you really are, you know, you find that you're passionate about? Is this the one that you really want to do? Is there something else you want to do here? Because I want to make sure we've got you in the right slot. And I about fell off my chair. I thought, holy smokes. Here's what I didn't hear. Well, you know, you have a very formal job description, and here's what it says, and this what you want to do is outside the scope of that job description. I don't know if we're going to be able to do. I mean, it was none of that. This guy, both of them, were totally enlightened, but for the director of human resources to be so forthcoming about, you know what, let's make sure that you're doing what you want to do and that this is going to basically read between the lines, make you jump for joy coming into work every day. By the way, I will also add, this just so happens to be a company that was voted a best place to work. You can imagine, huh?
Well, and that's why. And I want to tell people out there, you know, you don't – the point of power is really with you, whether or not you think that the people around you are. I have worked with client after client after client in every sort of work situation, and I can tell you that the work that we do and the energetic leverage that we produce in the work of getting that person totally aligned with themselves and totally committed to their own authenticity and sharing their gifts and talents absolutely moves the pieces around them. That's how important this energy work is. It has a profound effect that I couldn't convince you of if I talked all day here, but you can see it in the work that you do when you work with someone who helps you stay in alignment and helps you really commit to your own authenticity. I've had situations where a person commits to their own happiness, commits to their own being able to share from their own gifts and talents, and actually shifts the work role. They don't have to necessarily leave the company or stand up with a placard and march in the streets. The fact is they can literally change situations and events around them by being so utterly in alignment with themselves that if that workplace wants to retain them, that workplace has to change around them. And I've seen it happen again and again and again. Does that make sense, Mary? I mean, I don't know how to describe this because it's energetic. But I've had people have attitudes of bosses changes. I've had people have bosses leave and another great one comes in that's in alignment with who they are and what they can do and offer. It's just every manner of change has occurred in the work that I've done over the years. And
yeah,
it's all because the person is so committed to living a happy, stress-free, aligned life in their work day.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because sometimes the first thing that comes to one's mind is, well, I'm unhappy here, I guess I should leave. And that's not always the best course of action. And it really does start with taking a real hard look at yourself. I will also say anybody that's listening in, that's a supervisor, a leader, what have you, director of human resources, and you're in a mode or a vein to really be able to help people, something that, you know, it's kind of unsaid, but I think we need to say it, and that is you need to talk less and listen more. That's really a key, too, if you're really genuinely trying to help people get to their authentic state. One thing I would add before we move on, Victoria, is there's a famous business author that probably everybody listening has heard about, Zig Ziglar. This is why this topic isn't just for enlightenment leaders. It's for leaders who are enlightened because Zig Ziglar many years ago, in fact, said you have to be before you can do and you have to do before you can have. So this is one of the most important concepts, and I hope that we've been able to debunk the myth that this is just a bunch of hooey and this really doesn't relate to the business at hand. It absolutely does.
Well, and the other thing is not only a listening, you know, we'll go over somebody's points toward the end of the show and summarize them for you, but not only, you know, if you're in a supervisory capacity or managerial capacity, be able to listen. You need bigger ears than you can even imagine because you really do need to listen. There's another piece here, too, and I don't know how this may play out. Mary, you may have a comment about this, you know, in the hierarchy, but you also must be trustworthy because if you really want to increase engagement, you have to be able to be trustworthy and show and have conversations with people where they can trust telling you the truth.
You do. In fact, that gets into an area I know we want to talk about, right, with accountability and responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, there's this misnomer, I should say, that it's really a great thing that companies embark upon the quarterly review process or the semi-annual
mm-hmm.
review process
yeah.
or the annual review process. And you know, Victoria, I've been a VP of marketing, a VP of operations, a VP of human resources and training, and some at the same time, you know, any combination of those. I have yet to really see evidence or research that says that people really perform better when they get frequent feedback. I've never seen that. I have found that from my days and years and being in a human resource leadership position that we've created this situation in many companies where there's this term that human resource people use called due process, where you want to make sure that if you're severing somebody from the company or if you're punishing them in some way, that you're doing this consistently throughout the organization, that you have proof of that, et cetera, et cetera. So long story short, we've inherited years and years and years of this very dogmatic structure that includes a very rigid job description and a very rigid evaluation, and we think that this is the right thing to do. And quite frankly, sometimes people do it because, hey, if I don't do this and you end up leaving the company or I end up having to terminate you, I need to have the documentation as to why you moved on. And it goes back to the protected classes in Title VII and so forth. It's terribly frustrating, though, because you hit on something at the beginning. You know, you were reminding our listeners about engagement. The latest that I've seen from Gallup is that engagement levels at best in organizations are at about 32%. We've been saying 30. They're saying it's between 30 and 32. But here's something that I just uncovered recently. Millennials are actually a little bit lower. And the millennials are roughly the 26 to 36-year-olds or what have you. They right now, their engagement levels are only at about 28%. And here,
yep.
again, is where we get into this accountability, responsibility, and rigidity, because when you think about millennials, Victoria, they are, and God bless them, because they are coming into the work environment. They think differently. They have a very different, unique skill set than what especially baby boomers and the veteran generations have. And yet, again, we continue to try to put them in this very cookie cutter, here's your review, here's your job description. And meanwhile, these folks are so much more tech savvy than you and I could ever imagine being. They're social creatures. They love social networking. They love social learning. And you know what? Back in the day when we would take a coffee break and go get a cup of coffee, or some people would do the unhealthy, go out and have a cigarette, they don't do that. They want to be on Facebook. They want to be on Pinterest, Instagram, what have you. But yet I still see in organizations with accountability and responsibility, you can't do that here. I still see organizations that have these very rigid policies, even about social media. And it's mind-boggling, because millennials have an average of staying with an employer for only about 2.6 years, 2.5 years. And then we wonder why, again, we have such high turnover in the millennial ranks and why we continue to have such disappointing levels of engagement. I don't know. I've been going on.
Well,
what do you think?
Well, what I think is that, first of all, we're going to do a show later months about the cohort groups, about the differences between the different decades, you know, that have all kinds of names, as we just talked about. And we're going to talk a little bit about the social psychology of these different groups. But what I think in terms of this point is that the dogmatic structure that's been in place for a long time is not indicative. It's not in alignment with what we're teaching here in this transformational work. It's not about dogma. It's not about control. It's not about punishment. There needn't be that entire structure if there were conversations. Because if there were conversations, nobody would ever have to worry about legal action, because it would be an agreed upon shift that a person would be making along with their human resources consultant. It would be a mutual kind of thing. There would never be an issue. There would be no contention if there were conversations. So
and
my point is... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So my point is, when we change things in a fundamental way, when we make organic changes and things start to change in terms of the culture and the social psychology of how they work, and they begin to actually work, the old structure falls apart. The need for all of the control and the protection drops away because all of that is part of a fear model. We're talking here about a love model. We're talking here about a participation, a passion model, a completely different model of engagement. And the millennials know very, very well what that's about because that's how they tick.
That's interesting. I've never heard it put that way. But in thinking about what you just said, Victoria, that right now much of this is based on a fear model, that ties in with some things that I've been reading lately, too, that talk about the fact that many companies, many organizations focus on performance, which can be fear-related, instead of focusing on potential, which is, again, the
right.
compassionate piece or the
right.
hopeful piece. And I think that's a key, too, is as companies are really starting and leaders are really starting to put some thought to this and, you know, how can we make these changes so that, my gosh, we keep these, you know, these millennials and they're not running off every 2.5-3 years, but are we talking to them about their potential or are we looking in the rearview mirror talking about their performance, which doesn't really help at the end
no,
of the day?
No, and that's why the interventions, you know, again, the interventions, you know, you start where you are. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, I'd love to do a lot of the things that you're talking about, but I'm afraid to. I can't go into work, and I can't be who I am. I can't speak out about my gifts and talents. I can't tell somebody, gee, this job role just doesn't really fit. That's not safe. I have to keep my job. And the fact of the matter is, as more of us, and that's why we're doing this show, because we want to change the landscape. Hopefully there are a lot of people in positions of decision, I won't say power, but positions of sort of, you know, larger, broader decision out there that are listening to us. Because honestly, as the ranks shift and the people who were in elder generations working in the dogma region and the fear fields start shifting out, a whole new group of people is going to be coming in and changing this landscape in ways very much in alignment with what we're talking about. Does that make
absolutely.
Sense, Mary?
Oh,
yeah.
Totally makes sense.
You know, and potential is a future word. If we take a look at the words here even, and it's real important how you speak to yourself. We keep saying that in every show. Be careful how you address yourself, what words you're using, how you're languaging things, because you're hypnotizing yourself by what you're telling yourself in your thoughts. When we focus on potential, we're focusing on the future. When we talk about performance, we're talking about the past. Better
That's
yet,
right.
let's talk about passion. Passion is right now. So there's a future concept called potential, which is certainly better than judging performance, which is done, it's past. But right now, what we can really key into that's alive and pulsing is passion. That's
yeah,
the
good
present.
Point.
And that's the point of power. The present is the point of power. You cannot do anything in the future. You cannot do anything in the past. You can only do from the present. And in the present, what we've got to do, and what we're doing on this show, hopefully, is just igniting people's passion for their own passion. Work isn't even work if you love it.
That's
I don't
right.
work. I love what I do. It's not work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the concept of retirement, everything goes out the window when you love what you do. Why would you stop
That's
doing
right.
it? Why would you stop growing? Why would you stop contributing, you know, from your unique gifts and talents? So, and I know this all sounds like pie in the sky, but it is not. If anything is going to change out there, if that number's going to shift, we have to shift it. And I want to refer to a point earlier that Mary made about, you know, people sometimes think, oh, well, I hate my job, I hate my supervisor, whatever, this place is, you know, too controlling, I'm going to leave. Well, if you're not in an aligned place, it's called frying pan to the fire. And you making that decision, running, screaming from the room of a place that you're currently working, if you are not in very clear alignment with who you are and have a very different place to start from when you leave, you will find something as bad, if not worse, for you. Because it's the energy with which you're doing something that sets up the next frame. So be very, very careful about making decisions based on negativity. You want to make a decision based on positive passion potential, growth, curiosity, adventure. You want to make a decision based on what I want to grow into, not what I want to run away from. So just wanted to throw that comment in about a point that we made earlier. Right, Mary? So there's a lot of good
Absolutely.
Stuff in here. This is where we live. And most people live in fear when they walk into work, quite frankly. And they live under a banner of control. Here's my job role. Here's my boss. Here's what I'm expected to do. Here's what I got to do before the end of the day. Here's what's going to happen, you know, 2 months from now. I'm going to get a review. They're going to sit me down. All of that is an old fear model. And eventually that's going to fall away, guaranteed, because the younger people do not tick that way.
Yeah.
Mary, what other kinds of juicy examples can we get into?
Well, here are a couple that I think these are so easy. And some of the listeners, I'm sure, are already embarking upon some of this. But as I think about millennials and I think about the fact that there are some things that companies and workplaces can do right now that will help improve these engagement numbers, you know, do you have a formal mentoring program in place? Do you provide coaching? You know, what kinds of training do you provide? And all of those interventions are very different. When we talk about training, you're talking about developing a skill or imparting knowledge on someone. That's different from mentoring. You know, mentoring is seeking out the sage, you know, that's going to advise you on how they approach situations. And I refer to this as you're telling someone what to think. That is different from peer coaching, which Victoria and I both do. And that's teaching people how to think, helping them think, not telling them what to think, but basically giving them critical thinking skills, because the answer is really there. It's based on the premise that you've got the answer within. We're just helping you find that. So those are some things that are easy to do. And again, if people are listening in saying, yeah, but you still haven't really convinced me that any of this matters and when the rubber meets the road, there's a fund that I dug into a few weeks ago because of something I was doing for a client. I'd never heard of it before, Victoria, but it's called the Parnassus Fund, and I apologize if there's anyone listening in and I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. But it was started by a guy that graduated from Harvard back in 1985, Jerome Dodson. And the bottom line is, cutting to the chase here, this fund, the portfolio that makes up this fund, it consists of companies that were either best places to work as deemed by Fortune magazine or companies that should have been, but they quite frankly, like Google, that maybe didn't, you know, fill out the paperwork and apply, but companies that you know, hang on, they've got great retention numbers and they're great places to work. And it's interesting, if you go online and do some research on it, you'll find that it performs very, very strongly against the S&P 500. So Dodson started out really being a disbeliever in these best places to work kinds of contests. He thought it was a bunch of, you know, just malarkey, but did some research on it and then realized, you know what, these companies treat people better, the associates are more highly engaged, the associates want to dig in and go above and beyond, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so the companies typically perform better. There is research out there that shows that the kinds of interventions and the things that we've been talking about really do make a difference in terms of driving engagement and also helping drive bottom line performance.
What's the website you went to? Is it Parnassus.com or .org or what?
No, I don't even remember what website it was, quite
okay.
frankly. I bet you can find it because I went back and looked and just Googled Parnassus Fund and found it.
And it's
that
spelled
wasn't
P
the
like
original
Paul
place,
A,
but yeah.
Okay, it's spelled P-A-R-N-A-S-S-U-S.
I think it's spelled P-A-R-N-A-S-S-U-S.
Okay, good. Okay, because we want you folks to take a look out there, and you know, honestly, you know, for you know, the naysayers, all I have to say is that any naysaying, you have to understand that at some level, you're your own oppressor. Ultimately, we are our own oppressors because we're the ones really making the choices in our lives. You can choose to dance with fear. You can choose to dance with potential. You can choose to dance with whatever you want to dance with. It's your choice. And it's very important to start to come out of, and I work with people every single day on every single topic in their life, whether it's relationships or job or money or health or whatever, to come out of this cave of fear. That's what it's crippling. You, your happiness at work, the people who you hear all day complaining about, it's their own fear that's crippling them. And no one can change that except for them. So in naysaying, you have to realize that you're making a choice to say no to the potential and the possibilities that are out there, because there are plenty of them. And the whole world doesn't have to shift around you. You can shift in any given moment such that the pieces directly around you start to shift. Because, as I said, I've seen it happen again and again and again. I remember, one client had a terrible, relationship with the boss and said, oh, this person's going to be in here for life. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've got to get a... So we'll just, stick to the principles we're doing and you'll see magic happen. Well, what do you mean? What am I going to look for? Don't worry about it. You'll see magic happen. It wasn't even the next session. She called me and said, you're not going to believe this. And I said, well, what happened? I said, well, the boss, they left. I said, well, I told you magic was going to happen. So again, you have to be very clear and stake your claim on your own happiness and stake your claim on your own passion and stake your claim that you are going to ultimately define what it is that you're going to be offering in a workplace and convincing people that you understand and you would like to share, et cetera, et cetera. It's up to you to do this, regardless of a job description or anything else that may be in writing right now, because the old dogma is still going on. But that dogma is breaking and chipping away one by one brick at a time, believe me. We can see it, and funds like this are showing that the data is there to really encourage this change. So let's sum things up a little bit here, because we've got about 3 minutes in the show left. So we're looking at several kinds of things. You need to get in touch with yourself. You need to listen more, especially if you're in a leadership position. You need to have conversations and not offer advice or not offer any kind of feedback. Really talk with people. It helps to focus on potential and especially on where your passion's coming from. Mary, the other ones you came up with are really, really good too. Like, go ahead on with the rest of the list for us and remind people of some of these other points.
Yeah, I think read more or listen to books on tape. But however you choose to expand your knowledge base, do that. That will help put you in touch with your passion too. And then, as I mentioned, you can mentor someone or be mentored. I still have mentors in my life that I've had for years that still are very important to me. Think about getting a coach if there's something that, again, is a deeper disconnect with you that you'd like, to get some help in terms of how do I get through this? How do I solve this problem? Think about getting a professional coach. Seek out training. Don't wait for your employer, to find the next big, greatest whatever. Do some work on your own, right?
Absolutely. And we want to land always our shows with self-reflection. So, again, sit down somewhere and listen to these questions, bang around your head, and come out with some answers for yourself. Where do you need to be more courageous at work? How could you show up more? Right where you are. What hidden talents, gifts, and skills could you offer at work? Right where you are, right from the position you're in. We keep telling you that you have got to be the change. You have got to do something different. If you want something different to happen, you've really got to start doing things in a new way and showing up with courage and having the courage to speak out and having the courage to, to tell people who you are and what really lights you up. Right, Mary? Because who would know better? No one, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. Hey, we've got a couple of cool shows coming up in February. Hopefully we've inspired you here in January with these shows to start your year off in a great way. And the couple of shows that we're going to do in February, we're going to keep a secret, but we're just going to say that the hint is that they have to do with the month of February. Right, Mary?
Yeah, but could we please quit saying cold? They're going to be warm shows. Think warm.
They're going to be warm shows. All right, guys. So stay warm. We're going to talk to you next time, and we'll have a couple of really good February shows for you to honor the month of February. Okay, Mary, take care. Stay warm. Stay warm everywhere. All right.
Bye-bye.